All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com.
Welcome to episode 279 of the DFO Rundown, coming to you on a holiday Monday in the U.S. and in, Canada in some places, family day, of course. I am Jason Greger, and always our show is brought to you by Betano.ca, where you will have an endless opportunity, 57 games this week for you if you want to get on a run a little bit. Of course, none of them will be the outdoor games that we just saw this past weekend, but lots of opportunities. Also, of course, the NBA regular season gets back going. And lots. Stay in the game at Betano.ca as we welcome in Frank Saravalli. Frankie, how's your weekend?
It was good. It was busy. We had some youth hockey playoffs, some minor hockey playoffs. And
how'd that go?
It was a four-team tournament, round robin. We did not make it to the final. We went 1-1-1. So some heartbreak for the kids, but a quality season nonetheless.
Close games. Yeah, we still got a few weeks till.
Yeah, we lost in OT to open up the round robin.
Oof.
And that was, yeah, I had to pick a couple kids off the ice crying.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? I've had that too. So it's, I always say, hey, the kids who care, nothing wrong with that. So I just tell them, hey, we can't cry for 10 minutes though. Like, let it out, be good. And then we're, we refocus quick. Most of them are pretty good. They bounce back when the game's over. You can't tell they lost 10 minutes later. So
yeah,
that's good. A lot of fun. Hey, let's start. We are into now 2 weeks and 4 days away from the March 8th NHL trade deadline. And I think, you know, arguably, maybe not even arguably, maybe the most important piece available is Noah Hanifin. Mm-hmm. And give us the update on Hanifin. It seems like, is it trending, Frank, for sure that he's getting traded?
Yes. That is certainly the indication that Noah Hanifin is going to be on the move before March 8th, and not really a surprise given that we've gone so long this side of the All-Star break not hearing anything about a contract extension that it would be heading in this direction. Now, this is going to stay consistent with what I've been reporting the whole time, which has been that Hanifin had expressed to the Flames way back a year ago that he did not want to play in Canada, that his preference was to play in the U.S. So near as I can tell, there are no Canadian teams that are pursuing him. Not the Toronto Maple Leafs, I don't believe the Edmonton Oilers. And when you add all those things up, I can't imagine that the Vancouver Canucks are there. The indication is that he'll be on the move somewhere in the U.S. And I think the important thing to point out is that he's not necessarily going to be traded to the place that he's going to end up. And it's possible that he does, of course. The indication that I have is, if you were to, you know, pinpoint it on a map, that I think the Hanifin camp has expressed to the Flames that he has interest in signing in Tampa Bay eventually when it's all said and done. So I don't know if you can, you know, if they can steer a trade toward there, whether Tampa is willing to give up the assets required to make something like that happen, how much interest Tampa has in making, you know, how mutual it is. But the Lightning are in need of defense. And as mentioned, if you look in Julien Brisebois's playbook with the Bolts, almost every guy that he's traded for in this last run has ended up staying with the team.
Yeah.
Hagel, you know, Tanner Jeannot signed a 2-year extension after that massive trade. Nick Paul signed a 7-year deal. A lot of these guys, the last few years that they've been aggressive, at least if you're moving out picks, that you're going to have a guy that stays. The problem for the Bolts in trying to pull something like that off is they just don't have the assets. They don't have a first round pick until 2026.
I don't see how they have the cap space, Frank, unless they're not re-signing Steven Stamkos. Like, where's the cap space? Because I'm guessing Hanifin's like $7 million player. So I don't see where they're getting the cap space. The only guys that are UFAs is Stamkos at 8.5. Everybody else who's a UFA makes 800K or less.
Well, you have to remember the cap is going up, and Stamkos, if he's staying, would probably be taking a bit of a discount.
Yeah.
And they've got some other UFAs at the bottom of their lineup. I mean, it is possible to piece it together. They only have $16 million committed to next year's cap on defense, 41 at forward. You got to add in Sergachev, excuse me. So that's 24.5.
Yeah.
That's 66. I'm doing math on the fly. They said there would be no math. That's 76 with their goalies. They've got about $10 million in space.
Yeah, so you'd have to
basically
sign him
get Hanifin and Stamkos.
Yeah.
Again, just spitballing. So, and we also don't know what else everyone has up their sleeve, but I did have Tampa Bay on the list of suitors. You know, when I wrote about Hanifin last week and did a deep dive on his game, I just think the tough part is trying to get a trade done. And is there any way that they could possibly squeeze him to going there? I don't know that that's, I don't know that it's a realistic possibility, meaning he might have to just go somewhere as a pure rental.
Yeah. And even to make the trade work this year, you'd have to send some, you know, I guess unless you're getting a third team in and retaining salary, you're not bringing much in, right? That's always the challenge. And, you know, it will be interesting. Obviously, he's a good left defenseman. There's no question about that. But, you know, when you take out four of the teams that are going to make the playoffs, now you're down to, you know, to 12 suitors, right? And so, you know, Vegas doesn't need him, I don't think, right?
They could use him. I mean, Shea Theodore isn't back yet, and
yeah. They're going to need
a replacement for Alec Martinez eventually next year. Yeah. That's some cap space. That's a huge chunk of what you'd have to pay Hanifin.
Yeah. No, I meant like more so if you were like, what are the assets, right? That's obviously going to be key. If you're Calgary, yeah, like if Noah Hanifin wants to go to Tampa Bay, great. I guess unless he tells every team that hey guys, I'm not going to re-sign with you. I'm only going to Tampa Bay. Well, then that's really going to screw Calgary over when it comes to trying to get any sort of return at the deadline.
Well, that's what I was just going to say, is they're probably in a pretty tough spot. Like the teams that I had listed for this year for Hanifin were Detroit, New Jersey, the Islanders, Tampa. You can cross off Toronto now, and then Vegas.
Yeah.
I mean, that's four other teams. Tell me who else is coming out of the woodwork. So basically the point that I'm getting at is, it sounds like the Flames are going to probably have a pretty tough time getting what they want in return for him.
Yeah.
Really going to do is suppress the market for him.
Do you think there's any chance for a massive blockbuster Markstrom and Hanifin to New Jersey, and then it becomes a huge trade?
Again, is he willing to re-sign in New Jersey long-term?
Yeah.
Why would you give up a ton? I understand the Markstrom part of it, but why would you give up a ton? He could help save their season this year, but is it worth a bunch of future assets for one playoff run when you're not even guaranteed to make it? I mean, the win in the stadium series certainly helped their season. They're two points back, but would you do that?
Well, I'd want to have, obviously you'd probably want it to be almost like a sign and trade where you knew he was coming. But as Tampa Bay's shown, like some guys, you know what, until they get in the organization, you don't know if they're going to sign. And then they stay there for a few months and all of a sudden they're like, oh, I kind of like it here. So that is a risk, though. There's no question about it, right? That's the risk of acquiring UFAs is you can give up something for them and they don't re-sign. So that's the challenge.
Just now, look at the Leafs last year and Ryan O'Reilly. Yeah. Gave up a ton, tried to convince him to sign, and he's like, I came here a few months and I didn't like it.
Yeah.
That happens too. I just think so as enviable position as Calgary was in or still may be in, when you consider the returns that they could get for Hanifin plus Tanev, and then add in Markstrom, which I think is no guarantee to move right now based on that contract. As it stands, they're in an interesting spot. Like Craig Conroy's got his work cut out for him.
Yeah, no question. It's tough. Marc-Andre Fleury, Frank.
It's tough when people get involved to try and steer the process, I guess.
100%
is really what it is.
Fair point. Go. What about Marc-Andre Fleury? What do you make of him and teams you think might work for him if he's interested in going? If Minnesota, who is, you know, suddenly 4 points out of a playoff, are they even interested in trading him?
They aren't interested in trading him, near as I can tell. They're trying to squeeze in and make it this year. I think Marc-Andre Fleury's vision is solely focused on helping make them a playoff team this year. And I'd say as of right now, he's not on the market at this very moment in time. Now we've got some time to change, about 18 days, but I think it's going to take a perfect scenario. I think it's going to take the Wild being out of the mix. I think it's going to take clearly out of the mix. I think it's going to take a scenario that he really is interested in and has a chance to play, and a team that has an authentic chance to win the Stanley Cup. Now, that playoff streak is no joke. Personal playoff streak of 17 consecutive years in the postseason.
Nah.
I'd imagine he wants to keep that going, but I don't think he's going to do it at the risk of potentially cutting off the knees of the Wild at the same time.
Yeah. And the same time he, you know what, there's something satisfactory about being the guy helping your team come from back from behind to make it if they can complete that. So
I think the best way to explain it is this: the Wild aren't going to be asking, but if he goes to them and says, hey, we're clearly out, then that's a different story.
What about the Seattle Kraken, Frank? They're in the exact same boat as the Wild. They each have 56 points. They are four back of the Blues, no games in hand. What do you make of the Kraken? And what do you think Ron France is going to be doing? Like, does he wait right until the deadline? Or do you think Seattle's a team that, regardless of where they're at, should be considering making trades?
My guess is he's going to wait as close as he can. My personal belief, and look, I was the guy, rewind six pods from now, and I was the guy saying, hey, I think the Kraken could sneak in. But then they had another spell where they couldn't get out of their own way, and they've won two in a row now. But go look at their last 10 before that. Like, nothing about them screamed like they were going to be a playoff team or even a threat to be one. The only thing that they have going to their advantage is that almost all of the teams around them are likely to be selling off. St. Louis, Nashville, and if they don't do it, they're at least trying to. St. Louis, Nashville, Calgary, definitely Arizona, who's really fallen off, 1-8-1 in their last 10. Arizona's dumping every UFA it can. Matt Dumba, Jason Zucker, every single guy that they can potentially move, they're going to. We talked about Calgary. Does that open up the door for Seattle to get in? I would say I'd place a much better chance on the Minnesota Wild being that eighth seed
Yeah. No, it's
then the Kraken.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting race. Depends on who gets traded. We've seen other teams do it. What about a guy in Arizona? He's not a UFA, but I know they like him. They just acquired him. But, you know, a lot of people ask about Sean Durzi. Do you think he gets moved?
No. I think my guess is the way he's played this year, that the Coyotes think of Sean Durzi as a long-term fixture in their organization. Now, I think the tough part for the Coyotes is what's the future of their franchise? Like you'd have to think that with all this stuff going on, and particularly how in touch the Coyotes players have been with the NHLPA, and you've heard Marty Walsh speak really publicly and strongly on his feelings, which are not necessarily his personal feelings. He's echoing and he's using his pulpit as executive director of the NHLPA to voice the concerns of the Coyotes players.
Oh, yeah.
So that gives you some indication into what the rest of that team is feeling. What is that? They don't have a single defenseman signed for next season, RFA or UFA. So they've got some work to do. But I don't know what the situation is like for Durzi. I have no line of sight into that. But if it were me, I'm not putting pen to paper on anything until I know what that team is doing and where they're going.
Yeah.
Are you staying in Arizona? Are you playing at Mullet Arena? Are you actually moving forward with a piece of land? Or is the NHL jackknifing this scenario and sending you on your way to Utah? Would you sign a contract?
Oh God, no. I think they want to know. The good news is they will know before free agency. If we look at the history of the NHL, right? If they're going to move,
it feels like forever from now. I know that's, I would like to wake up tomorrow and it'd be March 9th, but I could free agency. I can't even think about how far away that is.
Yeah, no, it's true. The other thing is, you look, first of all, what did you, I really liked the Rangers jerseys yesterday. I have to say that. At the game, at Met Stadium, I thought it was great. I saw a lot of people, the Islanders, of course, the NHL tradition has become, you know, guys get dressed up in different things. The Flyers came as Rocky. I thought that might've been the best one I've ever seen, for any team. It was fitting. And like, I thought they got it down. Like they looked almost identical to Rocky.
The shadow boxing too.
Yeah. I thought it was
stepping
fantastic.
Off the bus.
The Islanders, of course, no fun allowed with Lou. I don't know about like, if like, to me, I just sometimes I wonder, like, you hear that, I see that story, then you hear the Andrew Burnett, you know, suggestions that he cancel the YouTube concert. Like sometimes I wonder if just like, guys, it's hockey. Like you don't need to be super serious all the time.
I just think it has the unintended opposite effect, which is like, especially when it comes to the Preds and the message from Barry Trotz of, you know, we've got standards and we need to uphold them, when we can't send a message that this team, whatever, you know, young guys, they need to know what the threshold is for success. Like I think that sends the wrong message. Like, I think it sends a message of, why would you want to go? Like, if you have options to pick places to go play, I'm sure you could have success without having that, you know, sent your way, without having to deal with that, where, you know, not everything goes to plan. And sometimes when you don't play well, there are consequences. That's, you know, we know that that's what happens in the NHL, but just seems draconian to me, like a little over the top. And I don't think it's fair to frame it exactly how you did, saying it's just hockey, because this is a $6.5 billion business. Like, it's not just hockey. There's a lot of money on the line for players, for coaches, for managers, for owners, for the league. But at some point, I think we lose sight of the point of this, which is, at least in the case of the Islanders, like, the point is to entertain.
Well, that's my point. That's what I'm saying. Like, you're telling me because these guys get team bonding and have some laughs and dress up in whatever outfit that suddenly they're not focused on the game. It's the most idiotic suggestion.
If anything, it makes them more focused on the game. They've been thinking about this game for weeks, putting together their costume, planning. Their outfit,
it's
whatever.
It's a fun thing. Like, I don't know. It just to me, it's, you know, it's like, oh, you can never have a beard. Like, come on. But anyway, that's just.
I think this is my own personal opinion. He's had a ton of success, and like his record, his track record is undeniable. I just think at this point, I think we've seen enough sort of evidence to point to in the last handful of years that it feels like Lou Lamoriello's lost the plot. He's 81 years old. He's the NHL's first ever octogenarian GM. And this isn't about ageism. It's just like, this is 2024 and things are done a bit differently now. And there's a certain aspect of the old school mentality that I think we can all appreciate. But look at the way the Rangers entered on fire trucks, in police cars, saluting NYPD and FDNY. And then look at the Islanders. And it's like, which team is more geared to likely have success on Sunday? I mean, the Rangers are the team that overcame the deficit and won an OT, and it was staring. Not to say that that's the ultimate recipe for success. It's just like, which team would players rather play on? I don't even think there's a question.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. Also, a shout out to Matt Rempe. I don't know if you saw it, Frank, but that has to be maybe the greatest rookie lap ever. His first NHL game yesterday for the Rangers, outdoors like that. Are you kidding me? Like, obviously, it's a thrill anytime to play your first game in the NHL for anybody, but come on, that one was that was pretty sweet. I thought that was awesome. And then, you know, hulking guy, 6'8", Frank. 6'8", played for Spruce Grove in the AJHL, and then Seattle in the WHL, spent the last year and a half in the AHL and gets his recall, and then, you know, drops the flippers in front of 70,000+ fans with Matt Martin on his first shift. Like, oh my God, that was nerve-wracking, exciting, all wrapped up in one, man. So, you know, for Matt Rempe, that's got to be one of the greatest rookie laps, though, ever.
I know he's a big guy, so he could handle himself, and there's not, you know, you can envision the scenario, Matt Martin punching up to get him. Yes. So you're probably not going to be in a lot of big trouble, but what do you think his nerves were like? He's probably thinking, just don't get dropped in front of 70,000 people.
Yeah, I would think so. Right. And at the same time, he's probably just, you're so amped up, right? First game, he probably knows what's going on. So it was, I just like seeing stuff like that. I thought it was fun. You know, who knows what, you know, it's been a pretty quick ascent for him, and you know, we'll see what goes on. But man, like the size of players in the NHL, Frank, like 6'8" and moves well. Like
the smallest guy on his line was 6'2".
Yeah, nuts. Like just getting a few bigger guys that are mobile and agile. That you just, you know, like you see Wembanyama, who's 7'4" for gosh sakes in the NBA, and he moves pretty well. And like 6'10" now is kind of like, meh, whatever. 6'7" doesn't even look big anymore in the NBA. It's mind blowing. And so the NHL is starting to see that. You got lots of guys who are 6'6+ around the NHL.
Yeah. Adam Edstrom, he's been up and been on that line, 6'7". Well, insane.
Yeah. That is, it's pretty big. Hey, I want to talk, Frank, about the season and the race for the heart. Auston Matthews, of course, is on pace for 70+ goals. He could become only the 9th player ever to score 70 goals in a season.
He has 48 and 52. Like, think about how close that is to 50 and 50.
Yeah, I know. It's
6 hat tricks already. I put out this stat before you jump in. Auston Matthews has more hat tricks this season than 512 skaters in the league have goals.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Insane.
Yeah, like he's the best goal scorer. It's not really even a discussion for that. Connor McDavid could become only the 12th guy with 90+ assists in a season. Nikita Kucherov could become only the 14th guy with 138, because that's what he's on pace for. But what if he gets to 40? Well, now you're down to 12th guy ever to get 140 points in a season. Nathan MacKinnon has a 26-game home scoring streak going right now. Like, you got four guys that I think all have a pretty strong case. You know, you might have somebody that you favor over the other, but some pretty strong cases.
Nikita Kucherov is six away from 100 points, or six away from 100 points. It would be the fourth time in his career that he does it. But what's interesting is He's at 55 games played now. He probably hits 100 this week, right?
Very possible, yeah.
So that leaves him the potential to be among the fastest players to get to 100 points, ages 30 or over, in a season.
Not bad. So I have to ask you, Frank. So you know what? You could make a case for all four. They're pretty strong cases for different reasons. When you have, I can't recall a time that you had four guys who potentially, now I know there's still 25 to 30 games ish left, right? So it's still a lot of the season. So, you know, something could change. Somebody gets injured. Maybe somebody goes in a little bit of a slowdown. Who knows? But let's say they all stay this close. How important of who they get their points against does it matter to you?
It doesn't matter to me, but what kind of case would you make?
So here we go. So I, good question. So I looked it up and I broke it down into the top 10 teams in the league, the middle 11 and the bottom 11 teams, right? Which I did bottom 11 because you had the 10th and 11th place team are tied in points percentage, plus with 32 teams, it evens out. So I looked at their bottom, middle, and top. Nikita Kucherov against top 10 teams is killing it. He has 37 points in 20 games. He has more points per game against the top 10 teams in the league than he does against the bottom or the middle, which to me is pretty impressive. You have McDavid's next in points per game in against the top 10. He has a lot versus the middle, and he actually has the fewest points per game against the bottom teams. So he's not, if people say, oh, you feast on the weak teams, some people want to argue it, fine. McKinnon and Matthews are the two that right now both have played more games, though, I have to point out. 23 for McKinnon, 22 for Matthews, just due to scheduling. They've played more games versus the bottom. And McKinnon has 41 points in 23 games. Matthews has 38 in 22. They're at 1.78 and 1.72. McDavid's at 1.41 versus the bottom. So now when you go over the whole season, to me, I'm not sure it should change that much. But I think when it gets close, people might have to kind of, you know, go a little bit deeper and look to see, hey, you know, does it matter? Because I think it's fair to say it's harder to score points against the top 10 teams than it is against the bottom 10 teams who have allowed the most goals in the league.
So my first question would be, of the top 10 teams, how do they skew between West and East?
6-4. 6 in the West, 4 in the East.
Okay, so McDavid and McKinnon are going to play more games against the top teams.
Well, they will by the end of the year, yes. Today, actually, McKinnon and McDavid have actually only played 14 games so far against the top 10. Kucherov played 20. Matthews has played 15.
Okay. Now, let me ask you a wild non sequitur that's unrelated.
Okay.
At what point, because this potential heart race is so close, does this open up the door for Connor Hellebuck to come in and win it?
Probably.
The votes end up getting split? And it's hard for goalies to generate enough support. And I've generally been along the line of thinking in my voting career that goalies have their own award and therefore, they probably shouldn't factor in too heavily to the heart unless what they're doing is so exceptional that you can't deny it.
Yeah.
And all I'm saying is Connor Hellebuck is he's knocking on that door. His numbers, expected goals against, and goals saved above average are so insane, are so off the charts. This is by far his best season.
Yeah.
And not only is the Vezina a stone cold mortal lock, I believe Connor Hellebuck should be on Hart Trophy voting lists.
Okay.
Where are the Jets, honestly, without him? Yeah. I'm not saying the Jets are a bad team. That's not what I'm saying at all. But they've scored.
Oh, I know.
Almost 60 fewer goals than all the teams around them in the standings.
Yeah. To me, the thing that's the challenge, like when Hasek won, he was playing 70 games, right? If you miss 20 games it's hard to be the most valuable to your team because for but 20
games. I don't think we can't go there anymore. That cannot be the standard. I understand what you're saying about what about all the chunk of the season that he's not playing and all these forwards are. But the standard of what the acceptable standard of what goalies should be playing health-wise and maximization of their talent. We know enough from sports science to suggest that playing 72 is way too much. So we can't grade them based off of that anymore. That's just my opinion. Okay. Well, he's played 39 of Winnipeg's 52.
Yeah. He's right on pace to play 62.
Yeah, he's on pace to play 62. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So you're telling me three quarters of your season starting those games and not being pulled in a single one of them? That's not three quarters of one season isn't enough?
No. Well, I would argue, yeah, based on the wording of the rule. That's all I'm like most valuable to your team. So if for one quarter of the season, you're not in the game. That's all I'm saying. For me, if I just rationalize it and I just look at the numbers and say most valuable to your team. And then the other thing, fair or not, that might work against him a bit, Frank, is Lauren Brossoit, his numbers are almost as good as Hellebuck's. Hellebuck has a 927. Brossoit has a 920. Hellebuck has a 213. Brossoit has a 222. Like Brossoit's numbers are unreal for a guy who doesn't get to play very much. And when he comes in, he stays sharp. It's, you know, so I wonder, I'm not saying it's right or not, but he's going to win the Vezina, no question, because lots of other guys have a decent backup. But right now, the Winnipeg goaltending tandem as a team is clear cut above everybody else. Not even close. Like Brossoit has got the best backup numbers by a mile. He's been excellent.
I'm just saying, we talk about how tight this heart race is. Why isn't there an opening this year? I mean, I would argue that the seasons that we're seeing from these forwards are virtually indistinguishable.
So that's why I think you're going to have them all in different categories, 1-2-3, 1-2-3 in different spaces, right? So like, unless people think, well, Hellebuck's better than, you know, two of those guys and he's in the top two voting, I don't see how he gets in.
My argument would be that if the Jets don't have Connor Hellebuck, and I just heard what you said about the stats of Brossoit, I get it. Yeah. My argument would be that I think the Jets are a non-playoff team without Connor Hellebuck playing at this level.
No.
How many points do you think he's been worth this year?
Here's my question on voting, though. Can you vote on what ifs? I always vote on what happens. Like, what if Hellebuck wasn't there? We don't know because it's just
How else do you calculate a player's value?
On what they did.
Right, but what I'm saying is you have to remove that player from the situation to truly understand their value, don't you?
Well, see, I always disagree with that because, like, look, so when Hellebuck's out, look what Brossoit does. His numbers are really good without Brossoit. Well, maybe Hellebuck's out 15 more games. Does it mean that Brossoit is automatically going to tank? I don't know that, but based on what Brossoit showed me, it'd be like, well, hey, Hellebuck's out. I just step in. I'm pretty good.
Okay, so let me put you on the spot. If you are filling out your Hart Trophy ballot today, give me your 1-5.
Ooh, that's a good question. Well, I probably still have Kucherov number one. I'd have MacKinnon 1. Kucherov 2. Oof. I might have Matthews slightly ahead today on goals. 3, McDavid 4, and 5. 5, I might put
Panarin.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'd probably have Panarin at 5, I think. Hellebuck's definitely one, to be honest, I haven't thought about a ton, but it's one that will require me to do more research. Like, and the other thing, Frank, I just listed those four and I want people, you asked me, so I answered, but I don't do any real, I try not to get a bias where I'm like, okay, this guy's going to win because it can change, right? Like there's still 30 games left. So I always calculate, I try to look, okay, who are five people I think I can put on my ballot? but I don't put them in any order. I write them down purposely in different orders when I'm going through my list of stuff. Cause I like to take it serious and do a lot of research on it. I try to avoid any sort of, I watch this player more games and I make a point. I got the NHL package. Cause the stat sheet one thing, but then you just watch games and you can see different things at different times. So I really try to focus on certain guys.
So let me present an alternative argument for you. And again, coming from a person who is typically not someone who has a goalie on his ballot.
Yeah.
But if you're going to make the quarter of the season that Hellebuck isn't on the ice because he's sitting on the bench.
Yeah.
What about all 60 minutes of a game that Hellebuck is playing that all of these forwards are off the ice for 66% of the game? How about
here's
that?
My argument to that. Okay. It's a great stat.
So because, McKinnon plays 23:01 and he's the highest time on ice forward of the candidates you mentioned. So yeah. That means that for each game, 37 minutes of the game or 36 minutes and 59 seconds, Nathan McKinnon is on the bench.
You're right. Now, Sport Logic tracks how much time teams have offenses just in the offensive zone, not even offensive zone, like offensive zone possession, just in the offensive zone. It's rarely more than 20 minutes a game. So as a goalie, when the puck's out of the offensive zone, you're standing there. Yes, you're on the ice, but you're not doing anything. So that's my counter argument to that is, yes, he's on the ice, but when the puck's in the offensive zone or even in the neutral zone, Hellebuck's not really doing much.
Now, so
when
you think physically, you think physically that forwards and defensemen exert as much energy as goalies?
Oh, no, I didn't say that. I'm just saying he's not impacting the game is all. Like, he's standing up. Yes, it's hard. He's moving around. But he at that moment, when the puck's in the offensive zone, Hellebuck's not doing anything, right? Like, to impact the game is all. Right. The forwards, when they're on their 23 minutes on the ice, they're in the offensive zone, the neutral zone, and the defensive zone.
Okay. That's a fair response. I would say my whole thought process, and I didn't mention this point earlier, has been if we really were truly talking about most valuable to his team, the Hart every year would be 5 goalies, is another reason why I typically don't do it. Fair or unfair?
Yeah, I think it like it's funny because look
when
at
you don't have goaltending, you can't win. Look at the Devils; you can't make the playoffs if you don't get it.
Yeah, but you can win the cup with average goaltending. Look at the
average, but if it's bad, you can't win.
Yeah, well, bad, okay, but that doesn't mean you're MVP just to be an average. So you can have an average goalie and win.
Right, but I'm saying if you don't get any goaltending, you can't win.
Yeah, well, don't get any. But if you don't get any scoring, you can't win either.
Okay. This has been fun. I like this sparring session. I'm going to say I would have a real hard time not putting Connor Hellebuck right now number one on my Hart ballot.
Number one. All right.
But I think the season that McKinnon has had has been unbelievable. And Kucherov, I don't think has gotten enough love for how much he's carried that Tampa team on his back. I would probably have McDavid fifth.
Okay.
Not only has this not been an up to snuff season for McDavid as a whole, it's not something isn't right because he still does stuff, you know, 6 assist night. That's insane. It's just, this isn't even close to his best. And I think he'd be the first to tell you that this season hasn't been close to his best.
Yeah. Offensively, I think that's true. It's interesting, though, if you look at a lot of his possession and defensive numbers, it's arguably been his best, right? So that's are we seeing a little difference there? But the only big difference in McDavid's game is he's shooting the puck way less than he has. Like the last 7 years, he increased his shots per game every year they got up. And this year, he's fallen back to 3-4 years ago level, I think it is. And you're just not seeing, like last year, obviously he scored 64 goals, but last year, when he was in the offensive zone, you're like, oh, okay, here comes a goal. Like he was a threat to score. And now
that's how you feel about Matthews right now.
Oh God. Yes. 100%. But Matthews just doesn't have, and somebody asked me the question, does he need to, like, he doesn't have the assist totals. Now it's a good question. I look and say, when you're that dominant of a goal scorer, although McDavid, I guess, shoot last year, you can have 64 assists and still have a boatload or 64 goals and have a boatload of assists. And so They're different in the sense, no question to me, Matthews a better goal scorer. I think McDavid would admit that just because of his shot, right? Like Matthews is one of the very few players that can score. Like his hat trick goal in what did he score? A hat trick in under 8 minutes the other game against Philly. And people are like, oh, those are bad goals. I'm like, no, they're not. That shot from McDavid that was probably 8 feet inside the blue line through a screen, he shoots the puck so hard and so accurately. Like that's where when you talk about high danger chances, we have to get to the point where you have to break down when Austin Matthews is shooting from there. It's a high danger chance, Frank. When 99% of the other guys in the league are shooting from there, it's not considered a high danger chance because they just don't shoot like him.
That's a great point. It should be player dependent.
Has to be
based right? on
like
what his
next evolution. I think some teams track that for sure. I know, like I know Dave Tippett used to track his own. I had long chats about him, and he would like it's not the same. Like certain guys, I don't care. Like certain guys are better around the net now. So when they have a chance, it's a better scoring chance than the other guys who are, no offense, mostly bottom six guys. And they don't have the accuracy. They don't have the velocity. They don't have the consistency of their shot. So even though they're both shooting from 15 feet out, and even if the goalie's, set, guess what? Certain sharpshooters, David Pastrnak, we go through the list of guys, McKinnon flying down the wing, his shot is more dangerous than a lot of other guys. And that to me has to be the next evolution when you get to really tracking the individual shooter, because we have now you can tell they've got all the data to show about shot speed. But then you got to look at, okay, how many times is this guy hitting his location? Because it's not fluke. Right. Like I know some guys, they don't even look at the net, Frank, but they practice so many times. They know from this spot, I'm shooting short side left corner, and they freaking hit it so many times. It's ridiculous. Like, look at Matthew's shots. Like it's, I think people don't take it for granted. Like, Matt McDavid getting all these assists. Don't take it for granted. Don't take it for granted that Matthews doesn't work his ass off to be that good of a goal scorer.
Mm-hmm. The Art Ross race is over, right? He's 9 ahead of Reinhart.
Oh, you mean the Morris Richard?
Sorry, the Rocket Richard.
Yeah. Sorry. Rocket Richard. So yeah, I think
it's over, right?
I think it's over. Yeah. Like, there's only one thing, and I don't want to say it, but everybody knows there's only one thing that would stop that from becoming a race again. So you don't want that for any player. So we won't use the word, but everybody knows what I'm talking about. But the Art Ross race, Frank, obviously Kucherov and McKinnon. And McDavid now, his points per game is higher than McKinnon at 1.65 to 1.63. He's got the games in hand. That could it could be a three dog race for the Art Ross, which to me is entertaining.
Yeah,
it's awesome. Let's we're normally this is where we go to Tyler Yaremchuk, but Yaremchuk's on another road trip. He's got a tough life, so I'll do my best Tyler Yaremchuk impersonation here now.
We'd have to pause for a couple minutes
because we'll be
listening to a speaker somewhere.
Hey guys, how are you? Let's go fill in the blank. Delivered by DoorDash. Restaurants and more delivered right to your door. You can even try the new Double Dash feature that allows you to add a second stop to your order with no extra delivery fees. For a limited time, our listeners in Canada can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code NATION25. You can see it right on the screen if you're watching, or NATION25 if you're listening. All right, Frank, the rebuilding team that is currently furthest from being a playoff team is blank.
The San Jose Sharks. Yeah. I think the Sharks are so lost, it's not even funny. I mean, you can see the path with the Ducks, right? Look at the talent that they're amassing. You can see the path with the Blackhawks, even though they've got a lot of work to do to fill it out. Look at just how much more, not just watchable, but dangerous they are with Connor Bedard back in the lineup. Mm-hmm. The Sharks? Good luck. Godspeed.
Yeah, there's honestly, even if I don't like us always agreeing and having the same answer, but honestly, there is no other team I could even closely make an argument for. You know, Chicago's got Bedard and they're coming. The Sharks, I don't know.
Who's their guy? It's not even just who's the prospect. It's Look at all the pieces they still have to rip off of their roster.
Dude, like maybe is Will Smith, like, I don't know about Eklund. Is Will Smith maybe their best forward prospect? Probably.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know how good he's going to be. Maybe he'll be really good, but it's going to be hard. They've got a bunch of older guys on bad contracts. Like Vlasic makes $7 million for another 3 years. And I don't know if you saw the comments. I really think when I watch the Sharks, I find they're so, it's not, they're so heavily NCAA focused. And it doesn't surprise me after listening to the comments from their head coach this past week, claiming how NCAA is way better than CHL, but that's what they do. And I think that there's a little bit of a noticeable bias there. That's not going to help them either. You got to look at every league the same and
I was going to say it might actually help them in the long run. Cause think about how long they have to tear these other pieces off their roster. Like first off, who is really in the market for Logan Couture?
Yeah.
3 more years at $8 million. I guess if they're eating half, maybe, but wouldn't teams be more interested in Hurdle? Because he's way younger.
Well, the big question there, Frank, is Couture's health. But I'll say if Couture is healthy, he's better. Hurdle's speed to me is a little bit of a concern, especially, and you mentioned the longer term years. Like if you get Logan Couture, because I don't think he's going to get dealt at the deadline, right? So if in the summer, I look at Ryan Johansson, you took half, $4 million bucks. Logan Couture at $4 million, I think, is a very intriguing player.
Yeah, I would agree with you, but my point is, and the reason why I went down this path is they only have one retained salary transaction slot left, and they're not getting any relief this summer. So if they pull the trigger on Couture, which again, they need to at some point is to begin moving these pieces off of their roster, that's fine. But what that does essentially is guarantees that Tomáš Hertl is going to be on your roster for at least the next two seasons.
Well,
only one of them's escaping. Yeah. Is my point.
Well, because Burns is done at the end of next year. So in the summer of 25, you could move Hurdle, right? Because Burns has this year.
Okay, sorry. One more season. Yeah. Then it essentially guarantees. But again, that's one more season. You're living in purgatory. So but my point with the NCAA was because they generally, you can slow play it a bit longer and you hold their rights longer. You could wait a little bit. Not to say that Will Smith is going to need more seasoning. He's not. Then what you're going to bump into or run into is how do you convince these guys to sign with you? That's the other part of the NCAA portion is all of a sudden. Players,
honestly, Frank, players, if they're smart, you want to sign somewhere where you're going to get an opportunity to play? Trust me. If you're anybody with a remote semblance of talent coming out of NCAA, you should be like, hey, I want to get my feet in the door for a few years. Yeah, we might lose, but I'm going to get to play. How many teams can offer you a legit chance in your top six or top nine right now? Like legit with hardly any competition? Not many. That's maybe the benefit.
But how many, if you're like, just to play the devil's advocate, and I'm not saying Smith because this is agnostic of who the person is, but how many people are going to get drafted by San Jose and see that they have 10 years? Like they are not the San Jose Sharks will. I don't know how to place a wager on this. The San Jose Sharks will not be making the playoffs before 2030.
Yeah. Well, hey, I wrote that a while back and they've already missed. This will be 5 years without the playoffs, Frank. Like they could honestly.
At what point do you run into a spot where people are just like, yeah, I don't want to go there.
Well, I guess my counter would be how many people have said they don't want to go to Buffalo and it's been what, 14 years?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I get it.
Yeah, some guys, I think you're right. But if I'm a young player and my goal is to get to the NHL and it's proven fact that if you play 200 games in NHL, now you're viewed as an NHL player by opposing teams. And if you're good, now you have value and team will trade for you. Yeah, it sucks. The first 3 years, you might have no chance of making the playoffs on that team, but you'll get to develop yourself as an NHL player. And even though it'll be hard losing, you're still an NHL player. So I think if they look the bigger picture and not, I got to be on a competitive team right away, maybe, but you're right. There might be some for sure, because I don't know. They're going nowhere, Frank. Like, I'm sorry. They can try to put lipstick on a pig, but they're the farthest away. I don't see a team even like, I guess the better question would be, who do you think would be second farthest?
I can only tell you from talking to players on that Sharks roster this season, how miserable it's been for them. And it's not just because of the losing. They feel like they aren't even playing on an NHL franchise with the things happening around them.
Oh, dude, you won't get, I've heard some ridiculous stories about, you know, lack of preparation and stuff. That's not ideal at all. So I would agree with you. So for fun, Frank, if you had to pick, who's second furthest? And then we'll move on quick.
Second furthest from what?
Being a playoff contender.
Being a playoff contender?
Yeah. I got a wild card for you, Frank.
Yeah, this might sound off the board, but I think it might be the Caps.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, see, I was going to say the Penguins, and they're both in a very similar category.
Yep. They're both in for a long, long period of time where they're not competitive.
Yeah.
But
then
I could at least see a path at some point for the Blue Jackets with their young talent that they've amassed. And I don't think the Islanders are all that far off from the Caps and Penguins, to be fair. Yeah. But I could see St. Louis and Nashville bouncing back. I'm actually a big believer in what the Yotes have built with their young players and draft picks. And I can't really say the Kraken or Flames, and definitely not the Ducks. So you have to look out east.
Yeah. Okay. Question number two. Auston Matthews will score blank more hat tricks this season.
Two. He's got 29 games left. You'd have to think that in at least two of them, he scores three times.
Yeah, I'm going to say three.
So that would bring him to nine.
Yeah.
And the all-time record is 10.
It's 10.
Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah. He did it twice. Yeah, correct, I think. So, yeah, that's ridiculous, man. I love goals. So, it'd be awesome.
I love Connor goals. Connor Bedard
is back. He has a blank percent chance of winning the Calder. And just so you know, Betano had him at 66 when he was injured. Now that he's back, it's up to 72%.
Read that to me one more time. I started to think about Goldfinger after I did the
island. Connor Bedard has a blank percent chance of winning the Calder.
I would say 75. I mean, look, Brock Faber and what he's done this year is undeniable. How much will voters value the fact that he's continued to do it while Bedard missed time due to injury? With all due respect to Brock Faber and how good his season has been, I think sometimes, and I think, you know, history will be the best judge of this. The award is best rookie season. But I think most times when there's an injury that pops up, we skew too heavily toward not awarding who is clearly the best rookie.
Yeah.
And McDavid was different because he missed longer than Bedard in his rookie year. But like, I do think we've gotten it wrong a couple times.
So,
and I wouldn't, this is not me saying that if Brock Faber were to win, that would be the wrong selection. I'm just saying, I think we weight too heavily that part of it.
Okay. And I would argue that we weigh too heavily just offense. So, because here's the numbers I'm going to give you to Brock Faber. Brock Faber is a rookie. He's playing on the number one pair. He plays the most minutes on a team that's right in the playoff hunt. Not a team that has no chance, plays the most minutes. He's playing exactly as many minutes a game as Cale Makar, for God's sakes. He's playing 25 minutes and 5 seconds a night. It is stunning to me. There's only nine guys in the league, Frank, that play 25 minutes a night. And Brock Faber, a rookie, is doing it. And here's the thing. Brock Faber is a plus two. Cam Fowler, Rasmus Dahlin, Mike Matheson, Seth Jones, John Carlson, they're all negatives. The only guys playing 25 minutes that are plus are Cale Makar, who's a plus six, Dobson plus 20, Doughty plus 11. Now, I know plus minus isn't the do-all end-all, but you're playing that many minutes as a rookie. You're playing, and I'm going to try to pull it up from Puck IQ, just how many minutes he's playing against the other team's elite guys. Like, when you play the most minutes on your team, you're not getting gravy minutes, right? Like you're getting the tough minutes. And Brock Faber, it's mind-blowing to me. 38% of his ice time, Frank, 381 minutes, is against elite players. And he's outscored them 17-14 at 5-on-5. He's actually plus 3 5-on-5. So that's why some people want to get mad about plus minus. You want to go 5-on-5, he's actually plus 3. And it's honestly, I would say it's 50-50 right now. I think people are focused so much on Bedard because he was the shiny toy and he's a good goal scorer and all that stuff. I get it. But I look at Brock. We haven't seen a rookie defenseman do what Brock Faber's done since maybe Drew Doughty. It is phenomenal.
I've told you already, it's not an indictment of fate. I think also him playing that many minutes is probably a real knock on Minnesota's defense corps. I'm not saying he can't handle it, but just look at the split between when he started. You know, he started playing a ton of minutes to start this season. There's no question. He averaged 23-28 in the first 26 games of the year. Then they had a massive set of injuries.
Yeah.
And then he started playing 30 for a bit. And since then, so the first 28 games of the year, or sorry, I've got my split wrong. For the first 26 games of the year, he averaged 23-28. Since then, he's averaging 26-36. He played an additional 3 minutes a night because of the Wild's injuries. And I'm not saying he hasn't been able to handle them. I'm saying asking someone that age to do that is an indictment of the Wild, not necessarily of anything else.
Okay, but also they're asking him to do that because Jarrett Spurgeon, who's usually their number one right defenseman, has only played 16 games. But so to me, I don't want to punish Brock Faber. Because
I'm not punishing him. I'm just pointing out that the reason why he's playing top competition, the reason why he's playing so many minutes, he wouldn't be if Jarrett Spurgeon were there.
Okay, but he's still
excelling. He might now be, and he will be for the foreseeable future. And by the way, what can we give some props? Like, what a trade.
No.
A first and Faber for Fiala, just Faber straight up for Fiala was a steal.
Yeah.
Getting a first on top of it. And at a time when you knew you couldn't afford Fiala.
Now, oof. Faber wasn't going to sign in LA though, was he? Wasn't that part of it?
No, he was going to sign.
Oh, he was? Okay.
It just ended up being a home run that he's from Minnesota.
Okay. I thought it was like Fox a bit where he wasn't signing.
No, nothing like that at all. But
like, I look at Faber. And
the Kings just had too many right shot defensemen.
Yeah.
That was their issue. And part of the reason why they ended up having to make so many trades to then better balance out the left side of their defense. They had too many right shot guys.
Yeah. Like I look at what Faber's done. It is so mind blowingly good. And the more I dig into his numbers, it really impresses me. And I don't think people should overlook it. I understand Connor Bedard and I understand the excitement of everything about Connor Bedard. And I get all that. And it's good. Right. But even like Connor Bedard, if, you know, 16 goals in 41 games puts him on pace for 32 goals. Like it's a good rookie season, but it's not like, oh my God, we've never seen a rookie score 30 goals. Like it's not, we don't see what Brock Faber does. And yeah,
guys in that lineup.
I understand that. But so you're saying Minnesota is playing him too much, but he's excelling. So if Bedard's playing a lot and he's not excelling as much.
That's fair. Okay, that's fair.
Right. So I think it's 50-50 right now is my answer. Because
does it matter at all that Faber's 3 years older?
No.
A rookie is a rookie.
And I think defense as rookies is a harder position to play. And like the fact that he hasn't broken down yet to me, like, and that's what maybe the last 25 games of the year. That's the other thing. If he can maintain this all year long and not miss games, he should be rewarded for that because it's hard. Like most rookies hit a wall at some point. Like they get fatigued. Like it's difficult. So the fact that he's actually ramping up his minutes, Frank, down the stretch, injuries or what have you, like to me, that's even more impressive. Like, so, and you know me, I love offense more, but I've been watching Faber and I'm studying all the numbers on him. Like, God, we just don't see it very often. Like Minnesota, you are having an elite number one defenseman in your organization now. That's going to give you it. Once you get out of salary cap hell, the Wild should be very good simply based on having a true number one defenseman. Does that help?
They're in a great spot.
Yeah. Like two more years and then they get out of that. And man, they could be, and they got a great fan base, but you watch, like, I'm not going to be stunned. The Minnesota Wild, once they get out of cap purgatory, are a much more competitive. The fact that they're even kind of competitive now, Frank, when they got $14, $15 million less than the other teams. That's pretty impressive.
So to recap, you are picking Faber over Bedard if you were.
No, I said 50-50 because Bedard, hey, he comes back. And if he goes on a run, I think he has the advantage because he has name recognition. And some people just look at goals and they're like,
but I'm not asking what you who you think will win, but who would you vote for
today? I would vote for Faber if it was today, because he's played way more games today. Right. The percentage will drop in 30 more games. Right.
Right. OK.
Yeah. So it's good that that was, of course, fill in the blanks delivered by DoorDash. This week, Frank, quickly, the
how would we got to talk about Jágr quickly.
Yes.
What a weekend.
Oh, my God. How fun. Like, I was sitting there and I was telling my son how I said, so son, just pretend for a moment that you make it to the NHL. And now you're 22 or 23 and you're playing in Edmonton, because I'm trying to make it simple for a young boy. And I said, and then you play a game and you have a practice, and Connor McDavid, who he sees as the greatest player, gets to come and practice with you because they're retiring his jersey. I'm like, that's what it is for Jágr, Jágr and those guys on the Pens. Like, he's one of the greatest players ever. And not only does he have his jersey retired, he does the warm up with them, but he also has a practice with them. Like, sometimes there's just fun things. Like, it's a crappy year for the Penguins, but that's just like, oh my God, like that would be fun. Like, just sitting in the room with them for those guys, it must be a treat.
The whole weekend, the Penguins executed flawlessly. And I loved watching his speech because, and I don't know if you saw it, but the year that I spent around Jaromír Jágr on a daily basis was one of the most fun years I've ever had. He is among the most warm and genuine people that I've ever been around. And I loved every second of, you know, one time, and I can, if anyone wants to DM me, I can send you the link to the story. But one time I spent an hour and a half talking to him after practice one day solely about religion. And you heard
Put the story up on Twitter yourself.
You saw him reference God a couple times in his speech. And I saw that he had some like trinkets and stuff in his locker, and he would draw a cross on a stick every day. And I was curious, like, what, you know, what makes you want to do that? And he just, we said, like, no joke, hour and a half talking. Right. And every day that I've been around him since then, whether he was traded to Florida or wherever he was, as he was chasing records, anytime I'd pop up, he'd always spot me, you know, come over, chit chat, like just an incredibly warm human being that I think really changed a lot when he went to Russia for 3 years. And I think he left, you know, there's all sorts of great stories about, you know, his days in Pittsburgh, but he did reference, like, and said a couple times, like, my only mission here is to be a good person. And he wasn't that for a long time.
No.
He was an ass.
Guys, it was teammates early in his career till later is a very different guy. That's just the maturation and development of a different human being.
But not everyone makes it to the other end of that.
Yeah.
And not everyone has the success that he did. And not everyone plays until they're 51 years old. Like, I think he's a one of a kind that I don't know that we'll ever see anything like just like that again.
Well, how many, I've seen some guys come out of retirement and do a lap before and stuff. And they like, I would love to see more guys, if they could, you know, when a team retires their jersey, to be a whole part of it like that. Like, to me, you know, now, you know, but it's different. Maybe they don't want to. Maybe some of them, their body's too sore, whatever. Jágr, of course, still playing up till a few years ago. Well, even this year,
he's still playing this year.
So that obviously makes it a little bit different. But, you know, some of these guys, you could go around and do a warm up, for goodness sakes. And I think, as a former player, that would be like, come on, I get to do the warm up again. Although it all depends on how you time it. Some teams now do the ceremonies before warm up.
You could do whatever you want. If you want to accomplish it, you can do it. And and I think for him, just what I was expecting of him when he came in and what he ended up being were so totally different. And I cannot say enough good things about him.
Yeah. Hey, staying with Pittsburgh, the one thing that's maybe not getting talked about a lot, if Jenny Malkin has 2 goals in 18 games.
Wait a second. Hold on. Can we, before we move on from Jágr, Does he have the best quote of all time?
Oh, yeah. My girlfriend wasn't.
I want to say thanks to my girlfriend. She's too young to remember when I played in Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah.
Is that not legendary?
It was Clyde. But then he waits for the applause and he said, but I told her all about it. I told her all the story. So, yeah, it's got a pretty good sense of humor, old Jaromir Jagr. And, you know, good for him. He's obviously a, you know, surefire Hall of Famer. And it's
second all time in points. Like, think about what his, you know, career numbers would be at if in the prime of his career, he didn't take 3 years to go play in Russia.
Yeah. But you know what's funny? You know how you say that he changed? I wonder if he would have stayed in those 3 years, if he would have ended up staying as long. You know what I mean? Like, would he have gotten burnt out? I wonder. Right? Because he kind of went.
My answer would be probably not, since he played this season. He turned 52 4 days ago.
Yeah, yeah.
That he wouldn't.
But playing at the NHL, he has admitted, is harder than where he's playing now, of course, right?
But he, remember, he had 27 goals as a 43-year-old.
I know, eh?
Oh. 27 goals and 66 points for the Panthers as a 43-year-old.
Ah, he's, buddy, his commitment to cardio and physio was legendary. Like, you talk to so many guys, like Jason.
It's not Strutters, just cardio and physio. It's but all
working on his game.
Specific.
Hey, dude, true story. So when Jaromir Jagr is with the Rangers, Jason Strudwick is like, you know, a stay-at-home defenseman. And Jagr actually ended up helping him make his stick because he said his stick sucks. So he made him a new one. And Strudwick actually admitted it made a big difference. But anyway, Jagr, like, everybody had heard about how Jags would sometimes go back to practice late at night. And so he's like, hey, Struds, I'd like you to come with me. Do you want to come and practice late at night? And he's all like, oh my God, Jaromir Jagr's inviting me to come to practice late at night. So he goes there. He's all excited. They get dressed. They get on the ice. They're warming up. And then he's like, hey, Struddy, I want you to pass. We want to work on one-timers and shooting from different areas. So Strutty was, all he did was pass to him for like an hour. And he's like, do I ever get taken in shots? He's like, no, we'll do that another time. Well, there was never another time. It was so funny. Jagr, man. Like, his own teammates, NHL guy. Oh God, I get to go to Jagr. Like, the special after practice time. And all it was you're basically the passer guy, which is still a fun thing to do. But after a while, you're like, I'm not really getting better here.
He's one of the rare guys that almost every story you've heard about him is true.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Yeah, or the good or the bad ones, for sure. Like, you know, younger days, like, oof, used to gamble a little bit too much at times. So, yeah. But
yeah,
he's had quite a career, man. He became, one of the biggest names of the game. And I loved all the mullets for the guys in warm-up, too. Have some fun with it. And Jagr didn't have one, which is classic. But, you know, and for Pittsburgh fans in a tough season, that's a game that just allows you to be like, hey, this is why I'm a fan, right? It reminds you of why you're a fan.
It's a shame how long it took to do it, because he's so not... First off, he was nervous. He didn't think that Pittsburgh fans wanted him back after he went to the Flyers and they booed him so mercilessly that I get it. And then he was so, you know, situated and fixated on helping his team in check that he just... It wasn't a big priority for him. And even the Hall of Fame, like, he's like, what do I need? You know, he reset the clock again by playing games this season. It's not the accolades and the honors. Like, it's not something that he's actively seeking, which I think kind of makes it even more special.
Yeah.
It's amazing. The Penguins only 3 retired numbers.
They got a few more coming though.
Yep.
Probably 4.
Yeah. It's probably going to at least double in size.
Yeah. I would think,
it's 3 or 4.
Well, Letang, Malkin, Fleury, Crosby.
You think Fleury ultimately?
Oh God, yeah, I think so. I'd be surprised. Like, but he's beloved in Pittsburgh. I don't see how it couldn't be. I could be wrong, but it would be. I think
maybe the tough part for some of the guys on those, you know, 90s Stanley Cup teams is that a lot of their success came in other markets too. Paul Coffey Ron Francis, and go through the list.
Like, they weren't there as long, right? Like,
they had some super superstars, but they just they weren't in Pittsburgh long enough to. You know, they had the team success, but not.
Oh God, as like Talk and Stevens, they had some hell of a players, but they didn't have, like, to me, to retire for an organization, longevity matters in that organization for me. So that's why I think those 4 guys will all go up there for sure. And speak quickly, and then we'll wrap it up. But man, Geno Malkin, as the Penguins are struggling, he's struggling. He's got 2 goals in 18 games. Frank, he's got no points in his last 4. Like, they really need Geno to wake up here if they got any chance to salvage this season. I'm not. It might be done. We might. Here on February 19th, we might be able to say the Pens are out, but You know, they need him to get going and have any chance at all. So
agreed.
Before we wrap up, a reminder to get in. It's a Monday. It's your chance. Start over every Monday, buddy. It's a new opportunity at success. That's why Frank loves Mondays. The daily, go to dailyfaceoff.com for the Wendy's Survivor Pool and your opportunity. See if you can run the week. You can win all sorts of great prizes. And somebody's winning $5,000 cold, hard cash at the end of the regular season. Frank, I think, got to Tuesday last week. Right, Frank?
Then the Bruins. Yeah, I made it one day. This week, I'm starting with the Jets getting a win over the Flames. But got to get your picks in early. This week is a holiday.
Oh, yes. There's lots of afternoon, lots of matinee games today. So enjoy the matinee games, whether you're in U.S. or Canada. Have a great week. And Frank and I will update you when we'll be 2 weeks shy of the trade deadline on the next episode of the DFO Rundown. Have a good day.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
All right, hockey fans, listen up because we've got something special coming your way this playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and let me tell you, it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of those questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. That sounds simple, right? But there's more. You got to decide if the total amount of goals in the game will be over or under a certain amount, and that's where the real strategy starts to kick in. Next up, you're picking who's going to find the back of the net first, and you're going to want to be careful because that's one that could be cooked early on in the game. And finally, you got to predict which period is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That's up to you to decide. Now let's talk about prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? For the daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards to treat yourself to some fresh nation gear, and you might even win a jersey from your favorite team. And for the big dogs, those who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.